Hello everyone and welcome to GFG tonight. We got some great news on Odyssey. Odyssey has released their Android app on the Android App Store. So if you want to follow us on your cell phone, it is now possible. I don't know, for those of you who have speed issues, perhaps it will be better. Perhaps not. I don't know how it will work, but I've given a try to the app. There are lots of things to work out. It's kind of buggy, and when I tried shifting between videos, it placed the videos on top and I wasn't able to stop it. But I guess all of this will get better. It's good that we are on the path to having cell phone exposure for Odyssey, and the sky is the limit. Eventually, I would like Odyssey to be as big as YouTube, to be a serious competitor. I've been enjoying my work here much more. Today we will review, there's an artist out there on the internet who's quantifying and counting every single vehicle and every single aircraft and missile that gets destroyed on each side of the war, so we can finally get a quantification of what's the relative efficiency between the armies. It comes with all sorts of defects. Of course, it's not a scientific study, and when you start with pictures on the internet, there's a bias already in that. Who knows, maybe there's a site that takes more pictures, maybe there's a site that shares more pictures on the internet. But I think it's the first clue that we can get to an approximation of the efficiency of the war effort on both sides. So we're going to have a look at it. But before, let's get some news item out of the way. DK Shadow says, blessed are the autistic. Yes, we love here on the show, we love a good autistic review of something. Some news item, Pfizer shot protected fewer than 2 in 10 kids, New York Health Department admits. And that's just the efficiency. It doesn't even tell you the fact that given that these kids wouldn't have suffered much from the disease, those who did have it, it doesn't even tell you ultimately how many of them would have died. It's much more smaller than 2 out of 10, but 2 out of 10 had any perceivable effect of the vaccine. That is the new number, and we knew that this would happen. They were selling us this vaccine with studies that were run in a tight window of time, 3 months, some time to evaluate the efficiency. And then they were like, see, science proves that it's 95% efficient. It's 85% efficient. It's 60% efficient. But of course, in the real world, it gets different, especially when you're facing new variants, because they were measuring these efficiencies on past variants for which the vaccine was specifically developed. So 2 out of 10 protection, that's a 20% vaccine effectiveness. This means that you've been forcing people to get this vaccine, while 8 out of 10 who would receive it were basically indistinguishable from the vaccinated. You've been oppressing the unvaccinated, when in fact, among your 10 vaccinated kids, 8 out of them were basically unvaccinated for all intents and purposes. CDC director says, nobody said COVID-19 vaccine effectiveness might wane. When COVID-19 vaccines were first authorized in late 2020, the public wasn't informed that the touted effectiveness might decline, a top US health official said on March 3. Well, we worked our ass off to try to warn people. But yeah, you guys didn't do your job. I mean, on my show, you would have been informed of that. We were talking about this. People like Brett Weinstein have been talking about this plenty. On alternate media, you would not be surprised. But here she is complaining that her side didn't warn people enough. Well, that's your problem. That's your problem, lady. Fix it. Rasha Lee Walensky, the CDC director. I mean, this could have been a release, but of course you didn't want to do this release back then because you were pursuing a maniacal project of nothing negative must be said about the vaccine because it's going to scare people. Gray says, we have to thank the threat of nuclear war for finally ending COVID. Yeah, that is true. Join me on Entropy. It is my favorite platform for super chat. Sprocket has already sent a super chat. These days, Sprocky is very excited at night. He sends me nightly super chats. It's a little bit creepy, but I enjoy getting the money. Tonight, our survey on Entropy, and the link is right below the video. Our survey is this good performance for an invading force? Yes, could be better, or bad performance. Those are the choices. You can also support the show by using the support button on Odyssey. They have an amazing credit card system, USD system, for super chats. Sprocket says on Entropy, what's the difference between your position and that of an invasion apologist? Why aren't you outraged at Russia when they kill Ukrainian civilians like you're at Israel when they kill Palestinian civilians? I wouldn't say I'm not outraged. It's not really this, but definitely I will communicate this outrage differently in both cases. Because I perceive, you know, as a... let's answer your first question, okay? What's the difference between my position and that of an invasion apologist? I couldn't be an open invasion apologist because if I was to do this, eventually the censorship would get to me. Even if Odyssey is an open platform, eventually the Canadian government would treat me under the laws. You know, there are still laws against being a traitor to your country. And I can totally see the stack of sanctions that they've been putting on Russian collaborators and basically Russian billionaires across the world. Some of them have nothing to do with the Russian regime anymore. And I see coming the time where it won't even be YouTube censorship. It will be just Canadian criminal law that will get onto this issue. And they will start going after anyone who's perceived as a collaborator to the regime. So that's one difference. Legally, I wouldn't come here and say I'm for the invasion of Russia. There are legal consequences, and a lot of these laws are as old as the countries, you know. But it's not because they haven't been applied for many decades that they couldn't apply them. If Canada was to enter into a war with Russia, and they would have videos of me saying these things openly, I could be in trouble. But there's also the fact that I'm not truly an invasion apologist of Russia. The only position that I would take an invasion apology is if I'm in the country and I root for the country to win. Like if I was in Russia and I would feel myself as part of the effort of war, I would be an invasion apologist, but I'm not. I'm outside. I feel very distant from this conflict, although I'm interested at the impact of this conflict for my life and for North America and for our conception of the West, NATO, and all this. And also I'm interested in this conflict as a demonstration of the lack of power of America, you know? America has been around the world doing whatever it wants, everywhere. And here's a case where they're not doing whatever they want. And that's interesting. It's a first show of weakness in the armor of the American imperial system. Now, your second question, why am I not outraged at Russia when they kill Ukrainian civilians? There is a fundamental difference to me between what Russia is doing in Ukraine and what Israel is doing to Palestine. In that what Israel is doing to Palestine is not giving them a choice. There is no option for the Palestinian resistance to lead an army-to-army fair military fight against Israel. It's literally just Israel bombing residential regions and making life horrible. There is also this aspect where Israel is making life horrible for Palestinians, even outside of the field of battle. in terms of isolating them, in terms of depriving them long term of citizens' rights. So that is a humanitarian concern to me. What Russia is doing in Ukraine, I see largely the attacks on civilians as being accidental. I have not yet found evidence that there is intentional torture and intentional disruption of the everyday life of Ukrainians that is desired by the regime and ordered as such. That's a very different situation. There's also, unlike the Palestinian case, there is a lot of offers on the Russian side to, one, engage only in military conflict, but on the side of the Ukrainian regime, they chose urban warfare. So here's a choice that wasn't given to Palestinians. It was given to Ukrainians. Another aspect is that there are corridors that are being worked on to evacuate the civilians, and in fact, there are lots of warnings in advance by Russia. Okay, we're going to bomb these things, so please leave if you're there. So they're warning civilians ahead, and I did see that there was many days at times in this conflict where I was saying here on the show, here from North America, I can tell you that this is dangerous. I can tell you that it's time to leave. And yet I've seen civilians choose to stay or be ordered by their Ukrainian government to stay for the males. So all in all, what I see in the Russian-Ukraine situation is much more honorable behavior than what I see in the Israeli-Palestinian situation. That's not to say I'm not outraged or it's not sad for the citizens. And that's also not to say that it's a bad choice to stay. I respect someone who tells me, JF, I want to stay in my town because I consider it's my town and I'm ready to die for this. That's totally respectable. I'm not questioning this. But then don't come and appeal to my empathy by saying, oh my God, civilians are dying. No, no. You have chosen to make it impossible for civilians to leave these places. You have enacted martial law. You have enacted a law that makes all males of adult age essentially be recruited in your army. Then whoever is left on the ground to me is a fighter. And so that is my position. It's not an insensitive position, but there are very different factors here that distinguish Israel and Russia. Michael Montfort sends $10. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, JF, your coverage of the Russian invasion has been eminently reasonable. Please keep up the good work. Awesome. I'll keep doing it. I really like what we're doing. I think that we're one of the rare outlets that gives complete and fair coverage to the events, not just to abstract ideas around the conflict and not just propaganda for one side, but an understanding of what's going on. Fluorid says, can't catch the stream, but you've been the most trustworthy news source of opinion related to the news for many years now, JF. Thanks for keeping us informed and reliably uploading streams for later consumption. Well, thank you so much. That is an honor to be serving this function for you guys. And it's been going well since Odyssey, as you know, I've taken the habits, you know, after the show, upload the MP3, make sure that the Odyssey video is available as soon as possible. It's going well. The show is going well, and you guys are responding by being here in increasing numbers. Philosoraptor sent a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, how do you reckon the Russian people will survive the sanctions? Every major company is leaving Russia, like Apple, IKEA, PayPal, Intel, AMD, car manufacturers, and many, many more. Can Russians survive in a closed economy? Well, that's the question. And I'm not sure they can survive, but I think they definitely could survive. It's a possibility. It's a distinct possibility. The question is, will these challenges of developing everything basically for their own, will it motivate them and will it create a kind of renaissance in terms of their technological developments? Like, will they create their own PayPal that eventually might be more attractive than the foreigners' PayPal, you know? it's not difficult. It can happen. And the Russian people are an intelligent people, relatively productive, capable of overcoming these challenges. But they are stuck in an economy that is very... There's lots of authoritarianism and central power in Russia. So the question is, can they make it happen? And we'll see. We'll see. I hope that they can. I hope that... But when you think about it, a lot of these international things are also detrimental to the nation. They are, as was expressed by Davis, the guy who was debating Richard Spencer on the Keith Woods channel on Odyssey, they are rent-seeking activities. They are draining the energy of the population. Like being banned from Twitter, being banned from Pornhub, like, do you think that's bad? I think some of it might be good. Total Grimm sends a super chat. He says, is it a violation of Odyssey's TOS to call for the assassination of a foreign national leader, or can that only be done on Twitter? Very interesting question that is quite sarcastic in its framing. But I, you know, it's not very clear because there's no appeal to violence. But very often, political violence and hate of leaders is being treated differently by all platforms. So I don't know how Odyssey would react to that kind of stuff. But it's true, we've seen on the left side a lot of hate, a lot of anti-Putin hate. And we've seen statements that are much worse than what got Trump banned. So how is it that this is continuing? Midnight Sun says, Jean-François, I enjoy your live, insightful coverage of Russia's special operation. It's top-notch. Well, thank you so much for the 25 LBC. All right. Oh, my God. I keep receiving super chat. You guys are so generous, but I want to get to the coverage. But Dr. Frost sends $20. Thank you so much. He says, wonderful to see you free from the shackles of YouTube. Been catching up with the shows I've missed. Baby number 2 is due in June, all due to your wise words on the importance of baby production. Wow, amazing. A second baby, that will be amazing. I'm very proud, very happy that my words have led to more babies in the world. And yes, that is definitely to anyone listening. We already have 200 people joining us live. Each of you should be thinking, what is my baby production strategy? Do I have a girlfriend now? If not, I need to find a girlfriend, and then I need to inseminate her. You will find joy, and you will find that everything will be all right in life. Once you have this order in your life that what you do and your own survival is secondary to the service that you deliver as a parent to your baby. Firestarter says, I need a girlfriend. Well, look out, because you know what? I'm talking to girls who are extremely annoyed because they say it's impossible to find guys that are actually interested in dating. Seriously. So there are women out there who are as desperate as you. You need to find them. You need to charm them. You need to get going. It's a numbers game, but you can do it. The Kremlin has announced its demands for ending the war in Ukraine. Ukraine must change its constitution to guarantee it won't join any blocs, i.e. NATO or EU, must recognize Crimea as part of Russia, must recognize the eastern separatist regions as independent. Those are not new demands. They had been made before, but Ukraine rejected them today again. So, I mean, it's... It seems pretty reasonable. It's amazing that they're not seriously considering this, because who's the imperialist then? It's like you want to keep your southeastern region that you've been shelling yourself for like 7 years now. You want to keep a citizenry for the purpose of shelling. You want to keep a citizenry that will only cause trouble in your country, It's not very significant at this point because these separatist regions are so they're so disconnected from Ukraine already that it's not like you're going to lose much from losing them. Why wouldn't you settle for these requests? Well, it's ultimately that the Zelensky regime is interested truly in joining NATO, and they wouldn't commit to the contrary. Crude oil is rising. Look at this 130. It's high, high, high. It's never been that high. This is the kind of thing that will lead to shortages eventually. It's going to be awesome to see how Western Europe can do without the Russian oil. And I mean, if they at this point they're being requested to give up Russian oil, and Germany is saying, no, we can't. So all this cancellation and sanctions are happening, but not to the oil imports. And so at some point, it's like Vladimir Putin is, even if he's isolated on every front, even if you put 1,000 sanctions on him, he's still going to be selling massive amounts of oil to Germany and probably at higher price. House to hold imminent vote on ditching trade relations with Russia and Belarus, including oil imports. Well, that's in the US, but is it that significant? The share of Russian oil in the US must be quite small. Foundations 21st Century says, Jeff, why did the Ukrainian government deny access to all the Delta water to the Crimea? You mean, isn't it Turkey that is blocking access to that water? Turkey has been keeping Russian ships from passing because they have a treaty in which they are allowed to decide who passes depending on whether a country is at war. And they have declared that the actions of Russia qualify as a war. But you say Ukraine. What do you mean there? What did the Ukrainian government do? You'd have to specify this because I'm not sure which event you are referring to. Today, the Ukrainian ambassador holds up a tweet from the Russian ambassador Lavrov and advises Russian diplomats that they can obtain assistance for mental help from the NIH by dialing 111. That's passive aggressive crap. It's like, I think you're sick in the head. You're saying this to another country at this point. This was a tweet by Lavrov that was saying the goal of Russia's special military operation is to stop any war that could take place on Ukrainian soil or that could start from there. Well, that makes sense. The war prevention is a justification at times for wars. Foundations 21st Century says Russia blew the dam yesterday. Okay, well, a dam was blown, but I think that what wasn't this in the Kiev area where a dam was blown so that a part of the area would be flooded so that it would be harder for passing for the Russian forces. I'm not aware of Russia destroying a dam, although it's totally possible. You would have to send me the references for this. Breaking: Russia approves list of countries who have taken unfriendly actions against it, including Australia, Canada, EU, Iceland, Japan, Monaco, Montenegro, New Zealand, Norway, Taiwan, San Marino, Singapore, South Korea, Switzerland, Ukraine, UK, US. So we are on the list of the unfriendly nations to Russia. Hopefully Vladimir Putin goes easy on me and on Canada. Yeah, those are the nations that have taken sanctions and they've said bad words against Russia. Agent PSI says Russia blew up the dam blocking the water supply for Crimea. Ah, okay, well, I'm not aware of this. So why they would do this, I don't know. At times it may be because they feel they don't have enough control on the water supply. Is it really a dam for water supply? then perhaps they don't want the possibility for the Ukrainians around the southeast that are still in the resistance to have access to stores of water. Perhaps he's betting on a dry season that would make it okay. He's sending me a link. Let's have a look at this link. Russian troops destroy Ukraine dam report. Russian troops have destroyed a concrete dam built in Ukraine's Kherson region in 2014. Okay, so that's in 2014. To cut off water to Crimea. The RIA news agency quotes the governor of Russian annexed Crimea, Sergei Aksyonov, as saying, Ukraine cut off the fresh supply, the fresh water supply to Crimea by damming a canal that had supplied 85% of the peninsula's needs before Russia annexed Crimea in 2014. The Soviet-era canal was built to channel water from the River Dnieper to arid areas of Ukraine's Kherson region and Crimea. Oh, well, there you go. You got the explanation there. So they destroyed the dam because the dam was designed to make the Crimea thirsty. So Ukraine was building a dam that retained water that Crimea needed. So that's why the Russians blew it, so that Crimea gets water. You know, all of your, the answers was in your very article. A bombing of a oil depot southwest of Kiev in Zhytomyr has occurred today, well, during the night. Massive burning here happening. So this was probably one of the closest and biggest fuel reserve still accessible to Kiev, or somewhat potentially accessible. It has been destroyed. ISW, Russian forces are concentrating on the eastern, northwestern and western outskirts of Kiev for an assault on the capital in the coming 24 to 96 hours. That is the state of the war right now. We see extensions on the east that had already begun yesterday. And we see a lot of action here in the residential neighborhoods around Kiev. That's the Russian forces taking position. We've also seen some aerial strikes yesterday here, and just the oil depot, as we've just seen right here. So the Russian forces are progressing. The closing in on Mykolaiv is continuing. We've seen some bombardment of the airport. There has been unclear information around the Mykolaiv airport, because yesterday we saw the Ukraine brag that they had taken back the Mykolaiv airport, but I had never been aware that the Mykolaiv airport was already dominated by Russian forces. So was it a small contingent of force that was repelled, maybe? In any case, today the Mykolaiv airport has been bombarded, and many Russian army personnel have died in their sleep as the cruise missile hit the airport. That is what I wanted to talk about today, the efficiency of the invasion and whether there is a good use of the materials and equipments on each side. That's a very interesting aspect to me, because the casualty counts, I believe none of them. You'll have a 11,000 to 14,000 evaluation on the Ukrainian side of how much Russians they've killed. How many Russians they've killed, I don't believe it. 14,000 bodies, you know, give me 14,000 photos of 14,000 Russian bodies. I haven't seen that yet, so I'm not willing to trust this number, just like the number on the other side of 500 casualties that the Russians give for their own army. I have no way to verify this, so maybe the truth is in the middle, but those are not reliable numbers to me, so I wouldn't speculate on whether it reveals something about the invasion working or not working. But for equipment, it's different, because equipment stays there after it's destroyed, and you can take a picture of it. And this guy, Attack on Europe, the guy's name Oryx, Attack on Europe, documenting equipment losses during the 2022 Russian invasion of Ukraine. This guy is collecting each picture. He simply does not count an equipment as being broken based on propaganda or press release. You have to show him the picture. That's how autistic he is. And that's great. That is a great approach, because we can finally get an idea of, because if you look on Twitter right now, you have the impression, my God, the Russian army is getting pounded. It's like all you see is tanks of the Russian army burning. But this approach gives me hope that we can determine to what extent, like how many Russian tanks do you have to waste to destroy a Ukrainian tank? Now, a couple of warnings before we look at this data. Those are pictures, so if something doesn't get pictured, it doesn't get included in the count. So you have to presume either that you want the link, here's the link right here, it will also be in the list of links always available after each show in the description below. It's pictures, so you can work with the assumption that an equal number of pictures are being taken on each side, but maybe not. Maybe the Ukrainians are more media savvy, you know. Maybe the Russians are more scared of publishing pictures. So if that's the case, you would have a misrepresentation of the numbers. You have to take that into consideration when you take these numbers in consideration. Second, those are different types of armies. You may have more destruction of tanks on the Russian side, and there may be some categories of vehicles that the Ukrainians just don't have. And so if they don't have it, you won't see them in the count of destroyed vehicles, but that's not a reflection that they are more efficient with them or that they end up getting destroyed less. It's just a reflection that it wasn't present in their arsenal to begin with, so you won't see destroyed versions of them. Third, let's not forget that this is a country entering another one, so there's a home advantage. Definitely, when you invade a country, you will lose more forces than, especially at first, before you establish dominance on the ground in certain areas, you're going to have to sacrifice a lot of forces. So even a higher count on the Russian side here does not necessarily mean that they are incompetent. It may mean that it's just hard to do an invasion of a country, which I expect, especially a technologically developed country like Ukraine. And let us not forget also that the biggest amount of damage that Russia is imposing on Ukraine is in the destruction of its infrastructure, and it's not counted in there. All we are counting here are tanks, vehicles, fuel tanks, helicopters, planes. The fact is that the Russian army has induced multiples, orders of magnitudes of damage beyond just tanks and just vehicles. It has stricken airports, nuclear facilities, captured nuclear facilities. It has destroyed oil reserves. It has destroyed the economy. It has destroyed towns. None of it will get counted here. So let's have a look. Russia, 897 total vehicles, aircrafts, and big weaponry have been either destroyed, damaged, abandoned, or captured. So that's 900, basically. And that's 142 tanks. Armored fighting vehicles, 87. Infantry fighting vehicles, 131. So some of them are from the Soviet era, and some of them are from the... That's what I understand this flag to mean, I'm guessing. And some of them are from the Russian era. 55 armored personal carriers and 4 mine-resistant vehicles, 34 infantry mobility vehicles, Then you have engineering vehicles, communication stations, anti-tank guided missiles, 47. So those are missiles that were shut down. Man portable air defense system, 16. Heavy mortars, 3. Towed artillery, 24. Self-propelled artillery, so artillery that's rolling on a kind of tank-like base, 20. Rocket launchers with multiple launchers, 19. Anti-aircraft guns, 7. Surface-to-air missile systems, 23. And radars, jammers, 11 aircrafts. And importantly, 11 helicopters, 277 trucks, vehicles, and jeeps. So there's an important part of that count that is actually smaller vehicles, like not tank-like vehicles, but more like jeep-like vehicles that are meant for transportation. So, okay, on the Ukrainian side, so we had a total of 900 across all this equipment. On the Ukrainian side, what does it look like? 272. So 46 tanks, 38 armored fighting vehicles, 33 infantry fighting vehicles, 18 armored personal carrier, 16 infantry mobility vehicles, 1 engineering vehicle, 32 anti-tank guided missiles, 14 man portable air defense systems, 14 towed artillery, 7 self-propelled artillery, 2 rocket launchers, 1 anti-aircraft gun, 8 surface-to-air missile systems, 5 radars, 8 aircraft, 2 naval ships. One of them has been scuttled to prevent capture by Russia, so scuttled on the Ukraine side, and 70 trucks, vehicles, and jeeps. Now, there are some categories that are missing here, including, for example, helicopters, but this may be a reflection that Ukraine may not have been using much helicopters. I'm impressed by the aircraft, 8. So there's almost as much loss of aircraft on the Ukraine side and on the Russian side. It's 11 on the Russian side versus 8 on the Ukraine side. Although, in addition, you get the 11 helicopters on the Russian side when there are no helicopters that have been taken down on the Ukraine side. So overall, we have 900 vehicles and aircrafts of all kind that were lost by Russia versus 300 vehicles and aircrafts of all types that were lost by Ukraine. It's a 3-to-1 ratio. And if you discount the jeeps, because the jeeps are getting targeted a lot, and it's not that they don't matter, but it's that a lot of the damage that is done to cars and jeeps on the Ukraine side is not counted. So something tells me that a lot of these civilians area have lost jeep-like infrastructure, jeep-like vehicles that are not counted in this. But at best, you would chop 300 from the Russian count. That would bring you down to 600, and you'd be at a 2-1 ratio. So somewhere between a 2-to-1 versus 3-to-1 ratio is probably the truth of what's happening in terms of vehicle capacities being lost as part of the effort of war. Is that efficient? I think it's the best it gets. It's as good as it gets when you are invading someone with the home turf advantage. You're going to face more losses. On the other side, what is not counted in what we read right here is just how much money has been disappearing in terms of the value of all the infrastructure being bombarded by the Russian side. There are 600 missiles that have been sent. only about 30 intercepted and captured. That means that a lot of these missiles are efficient at producing damage. And when you consider all of the oil reserves, the aircrafts, the airfields, the infrastructure, the buildings that have been captured and targeted, the losses on the Ukraine side ultimately are bigger than those on the Russian side. That would be my conclusion. Because if in the vehicle domain you've been successful at inflicting a 3-to-1 ratio, but then we're talking, you have a 600 vehicle advantage, but you've lost your nuclear plants, you've lost your airports, you've lost even presence in the air, almost 100% in the east, and you've lost massive cities have fallen and are now just piles of debris. That is much more than 600 vehicles. So in terms of destruction to destruction, Russia is winning. That would be my conclusion. Grapes Coda says, only in an enemy of my enemy sense. Okay, you guys were talking about different things. Stone Dust Bear says, Pineapple, American military probably killed less whites than Putin. What kind of biased... What kind of biased angle of counting is that? It's like you are making excuses that the American military is mostly killing non-whites. Okay, I guess. Very interesting as an argument, but Grapes Coda says, sorry, Jeff, we went off on a tangent. Oh, no, it's your right. I was trying to figure out what you guys were discussing, but it seems that you went too deep for me to recover it. So Twitter is currently experiencing outages in multiple countries, but the incident is not related to country-level internet disruptions. President Zelensky has published a video of him walking in his office. I mean, how long can he do this before he gets a missile on his head? Because this time in this video, he's filming the window and we can see the big buildings of Kiev. At this point, I'm suspecting that Zelensky can be geolocalized if the video is true. Now, is Zelensky playing the clown here? Is he using a blue screen? Maybe he is. But today, Zelensky has published a video of him walking around his office and filming in the window. If that's a real video, you might get a missile on his head tonight, if it can reach Kiev. Now, I don't know what's the status of the Kiev air defense, but definitely Zelensky is tempting Putin here. Stone Dust Bear says, Jeff, we were arguing if Putin is pro-white. You know... I get that this is a point of tension in the nationalist spheres that we've been a part of for many years now. I think I would invite people to look at this conflict from a more open view rather than just, oh, what's the best pro-white thing I can do? I get it, but it's like this conflict is different in terms of it's not easily transferable into a lens of nationalism and race, okay? And it's much more understandable as the eternal conflict between empires and the East and the West. And that's why it's been happening before. I was watching this video, Ukraine on Fire. You guys have been recommending it to me for a long time. But now I had the chance to watch it yesterday by Oliver Stone. That's an excellent video. Very fair to the Russian side. And it tells you the story of Ukraine, that ultimately Ukraine is always doing this. It's always negotiating, hesitating. And he says in this documentary, ultimately being Ukrainian is the art of hesitating. Politically, hesitating between an allegiance to the West or an allegiance to the East. And that's what they've been doing for hundreds of years, again and again. saying, oh, we're gonna take this side this time. Oh, we're gonna take this side this time. They've leveraged themselves as a country in the middle, as a country at the interface between the Western and Eastern empires. They tried to play their hand every time by switching their allegiance. So I highly recommend Ukraine on Fire. I didn't know what to expect, but because it's been released in 2021 August, so it didn't have the tint of the current war. But I mean, you could see from this documentary that this was headed toward war, and we see a personal interview with Vladimir Putin, so we get his insight before the war begins. It explains a lot on the current situation. Final hours for Kyiv as Ukraine warns Russia to launch final endgame within days. Ukrainian military commanders have warned that Russia was preparing to launch a final endgame all-out assault on Kyiv within days as peace talks were poised to resume. The peace talks have been failing, so if that was the plan, we should see a big attack on Kyiv, but I still haven't seen Kyiv being stricken enough from the skies yet to expect an entry of the tanks. I don't know what's the plan of Putin here, but if he were to send his tanks right now into Kyiv, he would send them to their death. So Kyiv, when you look at the other big towns, they have needed some shelling for multiple days before even we could talk about perhaps penetrating. And in many of these towns, the penetration is not over yet. I would expect Kyiv will take much more time than any of these other cities. So I don't know what's his plan, but we'll see. Foundations of the 21st Century says JF Putin is making a mistake by utilizing Chechen Muslims and now Syrian, possibly Muslim troops to fight against Orthodox Christians, which a majority of Ukrainians are. This will only exacerbate the nationalist fervor of the Ukrainians and cause trouble in Russia proper. I've seen this reading before. Going back to the whole race and religion question that I was initiating with Stone Dustbear. This conflict is not super understandable as a what is good for the white race, because what is good for the white race, like minimizing the amount of white people killed, that's how a hard white nationalist would maybe think of the question, or minimizing conflicts in between whites. But is it good for the white race to have Ukraine ally with NATO and 30 years down the line be a half white country like America is about to become? Like, you have to think of this in much longer term. Is it a positive thing to development to have LGBT trans classes in libraries in Ukraine in 50 years from now? Is it a positive development for the demographics of Ukraine to resemble those of North America in 50 years from now? Because those are the consequences of wanting a free Ukraine right now. Free Ukraine is going to make the same bad decisions as free America and free Canada and free France. You have to look at it from a much larger perspective than, oh my God, JF, white people are dying, we have to do something. As far as we know, white countries tend to converge, especially when they are under the liberal iron hand of the American regime. They tend to converge toward their own annihilation and their own destruction. So one can very well think that I don't think that Putin is a white thinker, and I don't see him as a pro-white thinker. I think he's a kind of federalist, but he's a federalist that has concerns about ethnicity and culture, which make him kind of accidentally pro-white in the way he manages Russia from the immigration standpoint. But even if you're accidentally that way, you may also be accidentally having a positive effect on the development of Ukraine going forward. In other words, his action in Ukraine may make it so. I don't know how it will conclude. Will it be a full victory and domination over Ukraine, or will there be a withdrawal? But in any case, I'm confident that no matter the conclusion of his action, there's more chance that Ukraine will be on the right path for its own existence in 50 years down the line than if NATO takes over it. Stone Dust Bear says, Jeff, nobody is forbidding white penises from entering into white vaginas. Whites are weak. That's why their numbers shrink, much like pandas. Well, that's putting the guilt on the white people themselves, and it's one, you're putting the guilt on white people for their low birth rate. That's one way to look at it, and it's not a matter of fact. When you put guilt onto someone, it's with the idea of changing their behavior. And sure, whites need to be told that they need to change their reproductive behavior. They need to be more engaged in reproductive activities. But also, the environment that you create for white people will highly influence their birth rate, which is why the birth rate of white people 100 years ago, when our genes were not so different from those of today. I mean, there can only be so much mutations and evolution. The white people of 100 years ago had large families and high birth rate. So there's something about the environment that can be changed that can lead to more white reproduction. And so there's still a bet to make here about in what kind of world am I in 50 years from now? In a NATO-dominated Ukraine versus a Putin-dominated Ukraine. And understanding that mixes can happen and that there may be some independence left for the country. But I see that a NATO-dominated Ukraine will make the liberal error, just like the countries that are controlling NATO. Dr. Frost sends $10. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, Papa, would you consider doing a review of Chernobyl? It's an excellent five-part show, in my opinion. I wanted to watch it yesterday, but I got into Ukraine on Fire instead. But I'm getting to it. I will definitely watch it. And I will do a review if I feel that I have something to say about it. Steven Robinson says, Jeff, I watched Hard to Kill with Steven Seagal last night. Epic man flick, bro. Also watched Under Siege with Steven Seagal this weekend. Long live Steven. Okay, I've not been watching a Steven Seagal movie since the last decade, but when I was young, I did watch some. Maybe it's a filmography that I should get back to and see what's happening there. I don't remember them as particularly bad movies, but I don't remember them as particularly good either. Important development in the election in France. The niece of French far-right leader Marine Le Pen, Marion Maréchal, on Sunday officially joined forces with a rival campaign for the April 2022 elections in a blow to her aunt's bid. She's joining Eric Zemmour. So this is the niece of Marine Le Pen, who was the daughter of we call him Le Pen so often that I forget his first name. Somehow it's Jean-Marie Le Pen. Jean-Marie Le Pen. So She is in the family, and she's been involved a lot in speaking for a true right-wing position in France, you know, and she's been kind of hotter and more edgy than her aunt. And her aunt's specialty was to try to clean up the right from an optics perspective, if you will. Marine Le Pen has been trying to dissociate from nationalism and right-wing extremist, and it's not a good strategy. Like when your feature is the Front National, and when your father is Jean-Marie Le Pen, you're not going to win the optics game. So you just go full, and you don't piss off your own base by abandoning them. I have great hopes in this young lady, Marion Maréchal, because she's been much more solidary to to a true right-wing view. And she's not been dismissing the nationalism, and she's not been trying to punch right. I think that this is very important, because I was rooting for Zemmour to a certain extent already, but with this move right here, that would be a wonderful duo. Today we have seen a strike in Ukraine on a church. Here we see a church burning.
Попали нам у церкву.
Бля. Пацани не за. I don't know if it was accidental or if it was targeted. We have seen strikes on food-related things in Ukraine. Russia had already been warning yesterday that they would strike the industry in general, the manufacturers, that kind of stuff, and a bread-making industry has been struck. Russian fuel convoy ambushed and destroyed by Ukrainian troops near the east of Kiev. So that's part of the count that we've reviewed on the blog. Vehicles, fuel, tanks.
Suka. Skiki, raz, dva, tri.
I've been watching so many Ukrainian and Russian videos that I'm starting to learn the language. There's this thing they often say, Zuka. I guess it means something like shit or fuck or something like this. Zuka. It's like whenever there's something happening that's, oh my god. Here's a video of the Ukrainian anti-air defense operating from his little monitor here. It seems that he's shot some missile or. Okay, Suka just means bitch. Okay, now I get it. They seem to be celebrating that some airplane has been successfully targeted. Here we see a grad system being deployed on the Ukrainian side. So definitely the Ukrainians are also sending shells, and this is a grad missile system operating from the Ukrainian side. Which is why you have to be careful whenever you see a destruction. You can't assume it's always Russians. The grad system is being used here by the Ukrainian side already. here a take on, you know, we've seen the oil fuel tanks that were catching fire. This is an angle from the explosion from far away. Or is it that? Let's see what they are reporting. Oh, it's a shut down airplane near Kiev. So I'm sorry, I got this one wrong. I thought it was the oil strike, but they claim that it is an airplane that has been shut down. Russia has bombed a bakery here. Bakery burning in Makariv, west of Kiev. The firefighters are intervening. And yesterday there was an attempt at humanitarian evacuation of civilians. However, the civilians that found themselves on the street walking away from Kiev, they have been caught in fire. So they have been caught by either missiles or bombs or artillery falling. All right, so it seems that they are making it, but they were scared by explosion happening. There are some high-level operatives of both military that are being shot and killed. Here, the Ukraine mayor was killed while the mayor of Gostomel, a town about 20 miles outside of the Ukrainian capital, was killed while handing out bread to the hungry. On the side of the Russian forces, Major General Vitaly Gerasimov near Kharkiv was killed. Gerasimov was a senior military official who participated in the Second Chechen War and was awarded a medal for capturing Crimea. And so here's a picture of him, Gerasimov, the chief of staff with Russia's 41st Combined Arms Army, eliminated by Ukraine's military intelligence operator. We have more videos of the drones on the Ukrainian side operating and blasting Russian convoys. They're really operating this like a video game. They're like sitting in a room and they're laughing when they get their shot right. It's quite disconnected. Operating drones is quite the thing. This war will be a total failure. Russian whistleblower says, macro op-ed, Russia won't return to the world order until after the fall of the Putin regime and replacement with the democratic government. Saving Kyiv is critical now. Lots of people speculating that the Russian effort is meant for fail. I don't know. It depends on how intelligent Putin goes at it. I'm still on the same possibilities that I presented 1 week ago, which is it's a possibility that Vladimir Putin will feel exhausted. He will feel that he's made too much loss, and he may withdraw and perhaps keep the South. One interesting thing I've learned in the documentary of Oliver Stone is that there's truly a South versus North distinction. I thought it was more like a East-West distinction, but the country, in terms of its support of Yanukovych, for example, is very divided at the middle, and it's South versus North. So there's a possibility that Vladimir Putin would keep his progression in Kherson, for example, and extend perhaps the DPR and LPR if he decided to stop there. Or there's a possibility he would withdraw and strike a deal, a peace deal, where only the DPR and LPR as they stand and Crimea would be kept. Or it's also possible that he will decide to strike Kyiv hard and accomplish his full takeover, at least of two-thirds of Ukraine. I still don't know what's on his mind. I still don't know how much resources he's willing to commit. But it seems to me that victory on his side is totally achievable. When you consider that he's having a 3-to-1 ratio at worst in terms of vehicle damage on the army, consider that he has an army that is 3 times bigger than that of Ukraine to begin with. So even at the current rate of just vehicle destruction, he could ensure a full destruction of the Ukrainian army. And we're not even talking about the societal destruction, the infrastructure attacks, where he's totally dominating. So if he concentrates some of his forces to that he's been dedicating to the entire country, and somehow they get concentrated on the mission of attacking Kyiv, he can definitely accomplish this. Now, what he probably can't accomplish is a management of the Ukrainian people. So we've seen a lot of protests where civilians are resisting, and this can get worse. I mean, from the Oliver Stone documentary, you realize that the Ukrainian people is very habituated that revolutionary action, takeover with Molotov cocktails, protest, violent protest of all kind. If Vladimir Putin decides to become a manager of Ukraine, he's looking into infinite expenses and infinite resistance. But winning a military conflict from a distance around Kyiv, that's feasible, as far as my assessment goes. But there are costs to it. It's not free. Stoyanka, a civilian village near Kyiv, it was under Russian artillery shelling. Russian troops proceed to attack innocent civilian people, the tweet says. Here's some images of the destruction. All right. John Drake says, as the Russians bring their supply lines further than not Ukraine, their losses will diminish greatly. Exactly. So, you know, the 3-to-1 ratio is in the most extreme part of the war, where it's the most difficult for Russians, because a lot of the Russians that make the early progress, the lead, they end up being isolated against the full force of the Russia, the Ukrainian army. But if the supply lines are solid, and if you can be ensured of safety in a section of the east and the south, then the efficiency will greatly increase, and the destruction of isolated cities like Kyiv will be feasible. Germany rejects proposed European embargo on Russian oil import. Scholz said he's preferring to focus on sustainable pressure on Moscow that would not impose too heavy a burden on Germans. So I was talking about this earlier. Germany is not warm to the idea of depriving its own people of resources. An attack of Russian against Russian soldiers here. Explosion. We have different angles of this explosion. A convoy being targeted by the Ukrainian missiles. The humanitarian corridors were offered by the Russian side. They said, you know, we could take the civilians to the Russia side or to Belarus. And the Ukraine president dismissed this offer. But then where can they go? I mean, when they try to establish corridors toward your west, they end up getting shot at. You don't want them to go to Russia, I understand. But then we're stuck in the humanitarian corridors, apparently being impossible to implement. That being said, Russia has committed to some kind of a ceasefire. That's why the activities of today were very reduced. And they want to get these civilians out of the cities. But how does it happen? Cathy Wood admits defeat on $12 bearish oil target as prices top $120. Oh my god, this girl this girl had predicted that oil will be at $12. Isn't that amazing? $12. That would have been a dream, but no, it's not happening. So now she's abandoning her ID. Oil will cost higher and higher. Carnage everywhere as market begins to break. I don't know, for the economy, it's not looking good, but who cares at this point? I think that the matters we're talking about are existential matters. And I think the way Putin approaches all this is by relatively being careless, by saying, you know, these economic things, they can fix themselves eventually. You know, we can be resilient. We can find ways to arrange ourselves. But the existential problems, we have to combat them right now. The market is totally dysfunctional. Traders concerned, Russian certificates of deposits won't pay out in the event of default. Well, yeah, that's why you go crypto. That's why, you know, these countries, they have always had the arbitrary choice of paying their debt or not paying their debt. They can make a law that the debt doesn't exist anymore. So that's the risk you take when you support a country that could be rejected by the rest of the world. They're not going to pay back eventually. Florida is now recommending against the vaccination of healthy children for COVID-19, the first state in the U.S. to explicitly go against the recommendations on the federal side. I think it's good progression, but it's late and it's been long to get there, you know. That's what I don't like about the positioning of Republicans and center-right people in Canada, for example. They've not been anti-vax enough. They've not been pro-liberty enough. It should have been no question that the vaccine, people who want it, you can take it. It's a product. You take the risks. But they've all been extremely pro-vax, and it took years before they would develop their own positioning, and it's too little too late. Justin Trudeau has been forced to sneak in through the back of Boris Johnson's office after being met by anti-Trudeau protesters in England. Okay, I didn't know that there were English people interested in protesting Trudeau, but it seems to be what's going on. And there's been this video that was shared with me. It's a French woman who's been making documentaries about the DPR, LPR, the southeast regions of Ukraine. She's been making documentaries since 2015 on this subject. And she was saying on French national TV, well, relatively mainstream TV, that you know, there's Ukraine forces are shelling the people in the Donbass region. And she was saying definitely it's been the case. And the hosts were kind of uncomfortable a little bit, but she made her statement. So it's the second time in French mainstream media that we have this view. And we've also had the Australian media. We had the guy ask the question. The truth about the oppression of the DPR and LPR people is coming out in various countries where probably the controls aren't as tight as they are in America. I think that American media would know in advance and would not invite these people. But in French media, there's still this intellectual environment, and people are allowed to say some things that they believe. So very interesting that the truth is coming out that way. Grapes Coda says, Jeff, I live in a small town in the middle of England, and there are Canadian flags hanging from our overpass. We're not politically charged town, so it shows how far the shockwaves of the truckers have traveled. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe it's, the trucker convoy has been attracting plenty of attention. Well, that is it for tonight, boys. I'm very glad that you were with me, that we could do this review. My conclusion on the efficiency. Ukraine efficiency at destroying vehicle is higher by a factor of 1 to 3, 3 to 1 in terms of destroying the other vehicles, but they're not that much more efficient on the air defense, and they have lost their plenty of air forces, almost to an equal quantity than Russians. And Also, considering that they have the home turf advantage, it's quite impressive that the Russian army is only overcome by a factor of 3-1. Overall, I expect the Russian army to be capable, if they want, if that's what Putin wants truly, to be capable of overcoming the entire country from a military standpoint. And then the question of civil management will open and will become complicated. But for now, 3-1 is not enough of an advantage for Ukraine to overcome the force that is coming their way. It is now said that 100% of the forces that were pre-staged for the invasion have been entering Ukraine. And Vladimir Putin has also announced, importantly, Putin says will not send conscripts or reservists to Ukraine. So what does that mean? Does that mean he considers that he has enough forces on the ground to win the whole war? Or does it mean he's planning a peace deal where he won't need as much forces? But it's quite impressive that basically the main personnel that he had already planned for this operation is all he thinks he need for now. So no special reinforcement, no conscripts, and no reservists. That being said, we have to make the difference between the pre-stage forces of Putin and potentially what could come. Because pre-stage is what was already on site around the border to be deployed. But there could be other bases that could eventually contribute to further reinforcement without being included in the pre-stage counts. So we could see more forces eventually that could come from regular army bases that weren't pre-staged for the invasion. We'll see that as the things develop. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Oh, and I forgot the poll results. Is this good performance for an invading force? 5 people say yes. 3 people say could be better. 1 person says bad performance. Yeah, I think it doesn't get better than this, because imagine you've had decades to prepare the defense of a country. You only have days when you roll into it to figure out everything. So I'm not surprised that the ratio is 3-1, and that's just the vehicle. Considering the infrastructure damage, I think the Russian army is overall more productive than the Ukraine army. Much love, see you all tomorrow. Thank you.